Welcome back to Fresh Ubuntu. I am your host, Peter Nicolaitis, and with me, as always, Harlem. How you doing, my friend?
Very good. And, let me take that back, because I'm kind of feeling blah today and, you know, very unmotivated. We were talking before the show that we're both kind of feeling this, I don't know what it is. Summer is calling me, and I just don't feel like doing anything.
Yeah, I know. So in the spirit of things, we're going to go fast and try to zip right through this podcast, cover the news after our little bit of introductions here and some user feedback, and call it a day. Because it is, I don't know about over there, it's pretty beautiful out here today.
Yeah, gorgeous.
I love Ubuntu and I love podcasting, but it's a beautiful day and I'd like to get outside and enjoy some of it. So
that's right. We might as well remind the folks that this is the second to the last podcast before right. The hiatus.
Yes, on that note of us wanting to take a break, we're going to be taking a really long break. So we're going to be taking a hiatus after next week's episode. We're going to be taking a break. And for maybe 3-4 weeks or so, I'm going to be away on training, and Harlem will just be taking a little bit of time off, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, cool. Sounds really good. Hey,
go ahead, sorry.
Before we get started, I just found out that, I think I knew this in the back of my mind, but I just found out that Ben & Jerry's corporate headquarters is in Vermont.
It is. It's up in Waterbury.
Right.
45 minutes away from me here.
Wow.
Yep.
You're at the ice cream mecca.
Yeah.
Do you eat ice cream?
Not often. Oh. And not now on the diet. I'm down.
Sorry.
Down about. Yeah, it's all right. Down about 13 pounds so far still.
Wow.
Still doing the MetaFast plan.
That's good.
So, yeah, I'm happy. Feeling good.
And now, would you mind saying what your actual weight is on the air?
On the air? No, I'm not going to say it on the air. But I'll say it into the microphone, and you can put it out on the podcast.
Well, that'd be good, too.
I'm down to 190. I was 194 at one point. So, 195. 195. And as of this morning, I was up like, you know, a quarter of a pound. But, you know, your weight fluctuates a little bit.
And
if you weigh yourself. Exactly. And if you weigh yourself daily, you become very aware of that, you know, of how much your weight really does fluctuate. And but it's, you know, it's consistently been going down. So, there you go.
Now, just to put things in perspective so that we don't all get skewed results here, how tall are you exactly?
I am about 5'9.5".
Okay, about my size. And okay. Yeah. That's good. Yep. That puts things in perspective. I can sort of picture you now.
Yeah.
And good. Excellent. Well, congratulations on your diet.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome. And you've been getting out on the scooter and stuff?
Yeah. I rode it into the work today. I had to drive the car this morning because I had about a 45 mile round trip over a big mountain, and Sparky's just not up to that. So, other than that, I've been zipping around on it, and I got to get out on my bike. I've been doing Aikido regularly, but I haven't had a chance to mountain bike for a few weeks now, and I'm really starting to miss that. So,
How hot is it over there?
It's finally cooling back down. It's in the, you know, like high 70s, low 80s, as opposed to like, you know, the high 80s and 90s that it was a few days ago.
I don't know. Sometimes the heat can be unbearable like that, you know, when it gets too hot.
Oh, yeah.
Just almost don't want to be outside.
I totally don't want to.
Anywho.
So unless you're sitting there tanning or something.
Right. By the pool, drinking margaritas or something.
You got it. With drinks, with swords and umbrellas.
Yeah. Shall we go?
Okay. And we're going. So this week in the news segment, distribution release, Ubuntu 8.04.1. Just like they did with Dapper Drake with 6.06, we've got a bunch of release on top of that. Mainly, it's got some releases, security fixes, and they've added a couple of things, like the Firefox is now the 3.0 final release. It's no longer beta. Samba client allows LAN-MAN authentication. Again, apparently that got broken in 8.04. various problems with Fuse and GNOME's file systems have been fixed. So basically, you want to, if you keep yourself a Hantuk or an Ubuntu CD around, you probably want to update so you get the latest version. And I'm fairly sure this would also include the SSH vulnerability key, SSH key vulnerability. So you definitely want to update and make sure you get the latest version.
Yeah.
All right. Next article we have is big news that you can now buy free software at the store. Isn't that handy?
Yes.
We read this on the Canonical blog and also a couple of other places, but turns out that Canonical and ValueSoft have teamed up, and you now can buy Ubuntu plus a support contract over at Best Buy or from Amazon.com.
That's right.
So, yeah. So, basically, $20 will get you a copy of Ubuntu, you know, CD, a quick start guide, and 60 days of technical support. Mm-hmm. So, I guess that's not too shabby. I don't remember what a year of support costs right now. But for desktop support, $20, you know, hey, that's not too shabby. That ought to at least get you started and, you know, get you by any installation hurdles that you might have.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's nothing wrong with that. And reading the Desktop Linux article, it looks like SUSE is selling theirs. SUSE number 10 is being sold for $74. Mandriva mm-hmm. Power Pack is being sold for $55. And Zandros Desktop Professional is being sold for $87. So mm-hmm. we're kind of at the low end of the scale. Mm-hmm. But again, that comes with 60 days of support. And that ought to get you through the hurdles and at least familiarize yourself with the new operating system.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I'm just going to, while we're here thinking about this, I'm just going to take a quick look on shop.canonical.com and see Ubuntu for desktop support. 1 year normally costs about £148.
That's so almost $300.
Yeah, it's well, I forget what the pound is right now. I don't think it's somewhere around 2 to 1. I don't remember exactly where it is, but it's significant.
Mm-hmm.
So $20 for 2 months, actually, you know, it's about $10 a month. That's the rate's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal. And yeah, I would consider buying it if I were, you know, brand new, you know, super noob. But and I apologize to all the super noobs out there, but I was once a super noob. But yeah, I would consider
buying
it.
Now you're just a noob, right?
Now I'm just like a noob, you know, a third level nude or something.
Third level noob. Okay, that's good. Level 3 noob. You know, it's kind of funny, though. On that the page on Canonical's site where you go and, you know, where you can purchase support,
yeah. Uh-huh.
It's kind of funny because they're using the same clip art, or not clip art, but the same stock photo that I have seen in several other locations.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of funny. If you scroll down to the photo by Ubuntu for server support, there's a woman there folding her arms. That same picture has been used by... I don't know. I've seen it 3 other places. One of them was Microsoft, and another was Citrix. So this woman gets around. I mean, she works for Microsoft, Citrix, Canonical. She, you know, she's cross-platform.
I hope she's getting paid.
And everything.
Yeah. Hey, so back to the Ubuntu 8.04.1 release. You have a DistroWatch article too that
yes.
mentions it. I just wanted
yes.
to mention that we are linked on DistroWatch, if you didn't know mm-hmm. that already. So that got us a lot of PageRank juice. So
yep.
anyway, just wanted to mention it. We are there.
Yeah, on the note of DistroWatch 2, I know that they did recently have some turnover. There is a new host of the DistroWatch Weekly podcast, Jim Putman.
Mm-hmm.
He retired from the show, and another gentleman took over. I only heard one episode, and I apologize, I don't know his name. But if you haven't listened to DistroWatch Weekly podcast, you might want to give it another shot now with a new host.
Yeah, cool.
So, just FYI.
FYI.
What's next?
So, well, what do you think about this Ubuntu being sold at Best Buy? You think it's good?
I do think it's good. I think it's good to get it out there. And, you know, at first the joke around here was, you know, like, oh, good. Like I said, hey, you can buy free software now, right? But the truth is you're getting a support contract. And, you know, like I said, the rate is actually not that bad. It comes out at about $120 per year, where you'd normally be paying, you know, $300-ish or so for around the same thing. For a whole year's support, and especially if you don't really need a whole year's support, if you just have some installation problems. I know the only time we ever bought any commercial Linux support from a vendor was Red Hat. We bought a couple of support incidents from Red Hat, and they were exclusively dealing with initial setup and configuration issues. So once we had that, we never called them again. So this actually might be a pretty good deal. I think it's kind of, go ahead, but I was just going to say, I think that it's kind of interesting because there's no mention, obviously, on the article of, you know, free or open source software on the Best Buy website.
Oh.
And I thought that was kind of funny that, you know, well, obviously they don't want to promote the stuff, as being free because right. Then people, why would anyone buy it?
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I think there's a good reason to.
So. I think it's a good idea. But I'm hoping it just doesn't cheapen the brand or anything like that. So, that's my only.
I think it's going to be a good thing because people are going to see it. You know.
Yeah.
I just hope it works. I hope people actually, you know, for some folks that it makes sense, they actually buy it. But you know, a lot of hobbyists and folks with, enthusiasts who have done the installs for them and stuff already probably won't have to buy it. They probably won't bother because, you know, friends or relatives have already set it up for them.
Yeah.
But, a new person, on the street just or off the street or whatnot wants to try it out, this is a good opportunity for them. And they get some tech support, you know, to boot. So
yeah. Well, good.
I think it's a good move.
Yeah, that is a good move. So. Yeah. I guess. So. Anyway, moving right along.
Do you think it's a good move? I think it's a good move. What's your opinion?
I think it's, I don't know. I'm still up in the air. First of all, I don't know if I like the price point. $20 seems a little too cheap. You know what I mean? And SUSE's selling theirs for $75, $74. Xandro's for $80-something. You know, there's this perception, especially here in the United States, that there's a threshold. If it's too low, then it appears that the product might be cheap. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
And if it's too high, then it might be out of people's reach. So I don't know about the price point.
I wonder, that's an interesting thing. Now, when you talked about, SLES and SUSE and Xandros, what are their, what is the duration of the support that comes with those?
That's a good question.
Do those include a year? Because I know when we were buying Red Hat back in the day, you know, that was a year-long support contract.
Right. And I don't see anything wrong with giving a year long at a discount price, because after the first 3-4 months, your tech support tickets are probably going to decrease quite rapidly per user.
Right.
So, you know, you might hear from them for the first couple of months, and then after that, you won't hear from them for a while. So.
Right. That's the idea. That's the intention anyway.
Sure.
With most tech support, you know, the idea is that you don't want to be, you know, when Dell or Gateway or whatnot sells a computer, as soon as they, you know, have one or two tech support calls, they start losing money. So, you know, they're banking on not having to answer a lot of tech support calls.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see how this plays out.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, moving right along.
What do we have next?
You have the Ubuntu 8.10 Alpha Screen Tour.
What do you think of that? Did you look that over?
Yeah, I looked at the pictures, and again,
pictures.
Well, I mean, they still have the same the Hardy Heron wallpaper, and
yes.
You know, I'm expecting that to change when IBEX comes out, of course. You know, I'm okay with the grayish. I'm okay with that. I think it'll be a nice change, I think. But then again, they have to deal with some contrast issues. Sometimes the windows and the icons don't don't have enough contrast to them. And mm-hmm. Visually, I think they need to work on that the windowing, the window motif, and the coloring a little bit. I'm hoping they go to more of a glassy type of look, and that way the contrast will show up a little bit better. But overall, not bad. It's a step in the right direction.
I'm a little concerned about the dark. I don't know. I know that I wanted to see something, less brown. I hate to say it, and I don't want to sound negative, but I don't think gray is the direction that I would have chosen to move into. And my complaint, and when I pointed this out briefly last week, because I had just barely gotten the Alpha installed in a virtual machine, is I don't like the fact that the title bars and the borders and all of the window areas are all gray, that there's no delineation. It looks like they're going for the Macintosh, look with the whole brushed metal where everything's all one color.
Right.
Except if you're used to that on a Mac, then you expect that you can click and drag anywhere. And it's not clear where you can and cannot click to either resize or move a window in this current color scheme. So I really hope that they address that.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be done too, because if you have seen Ubuntu Studio's interface, at least their theme, I think it does a much better job of, like you were saying, delineating what areas you can click on and what you can't click on. So a step in the right direction, and just maybe more help with the artwork team. I mean, they could probably use some more help. So any art people out there, give them a hand if they're probably asking for it, for one thing. So
as always, we should, that's something we probably could do even better than going through brainstorm and whatnot, is just reminding folks that there are always different ways that you can help out, your favorite open source project, be it Ubuntu or something else. So
it doesn't necessarily have to be coding or programming or anything like that.
Yep. Just confirming bug reports or, doing a weekly podcast or whatever.
Sustained,
right, regular.
Regular and sustained.
All right. Okay, next up we had an interview with Mark Shuttleworth. Apparently he's been doing a lot of interviews lately, and this one came out in Linux Magazine. I did read this in the print edition when it came out a couple weeks ago, and it was all right. Nothing earth-shattering there, so I didn't bring it up, but you can read it now for yourself, even if you don't subscribe to the print edition, and that's over at linuxmag.com, linux-mag.com, I should say. And did you read that that interview?
I read bits and pieces of it.
Did you get anything earth-shattering out of it?
No, not really. He was just I think it was more of a personal interview, getting to know the guy kind of thing. I'll probably read it after the podcast. And then I might have something to say about it.
Okay, well maybe we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, okay.
I think it was, it was worth reading. I didn't come with anything, earth-shattering like this then. So,
We were mentioning earlier in the podcast too that we're both we like audiobooks, and to read anything nowadays is, it's almost like a chore to me. So,
it does take more work. Although I tell you though, now that I have been on that media fast, as suggested in the 4-hour work week, I'm really only going into Google Reader if I need to check up on certain things, but I'm not spending nearly as much time just aimlessly surfing news articles and stuff.
Yeah.
And somewhat, I feel a little bit guilty, but I also cut way back down on my podcasts.
Oh, did you?
And, but I do have a lot more. Huh? Reading, listening to podcasts, listening to them. So,
Yeah, me too.
So as a result, I feel like there's probably stuff out there that I'm missing, but so far it hasn't come to bite me yet. Yeah. And I've been reading more too, so getting some fiction books knocked out. So
good.
It's kind of kind of fun. So, you know, feel free. Now's a good time. You know, a lot of podcasters go on hiatus. So unsubscribe from a bunch of other RSS feeds. Not ours. And but we'll help you. You see, you don't have to unsubscribe from ours because we're taking a hiatus for you. So you can do the media fast without having to change anything. You don't have to unsubscribe from our podcast, and we will still support you in your media fasting efforts should you choose to do so. That's us. We're here to help.
Yes, we are. Fresh Ubuntu.
Fresh Ubuntu. You're welcome. All right. I think that pretty much wraps it up for news, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
All right.
You have anything else?
That's all I had for news. But we had some listener feedback.
Okay.
And I also had a funny little article, too. We're going to throw this article in the show notes. It's you can imagine this as a typical day at work for me. And that's exactly what a couple of my guildmates in World of Warcraft did. So I got this email, and it said, this is how we imagine Peter's day at work. So it's a video. It's very funny. Not quite, not too safe for work. I wouldn't play this in the office. But it's pretty darn hilarious. And if you just imagine that the main character is playing Warcraft instead of Halo, then it's a typical day at work for me. So so this is, it's guaranteed to give a laugh, especially if you have any technical knowledge. You really can appreciate you know, some of the nuances in the parts where he's like, you know, doing web server troubleshooting and email server well, we'll say maintenance for lack of a better description.
Okay. So. Can't wait to see the rest of it.
Yeah, you'll love it. So let's move on and do some feedback.
Great. Sounds good. We will be right back shortly and right back with user feedback. And you're on.
And I'm on again on the spot. Here I am. You know, it's funny, every time we take a break like that, it's like we'd never really, those breaks never seem long enough to me.
I'm exhausted every time we podcast.
I tell you, I just, it's like, whew. I'm talking about in between, like when we just take a break.
All right.
Okay. We did have some feedback and a couple of, I want to start off with the one about the gentleman who inquired last week about wireless USB dongles,
right,
or wireless USB adapters, and wondering what ones we suggested. We got a message from a gentleman named Drew. He said, hey, Peter, love the show. I have used a Belkin F5D7050B. That's Foxtrot 5 Delta 7050 Beta on my Toshiba laptop running without any problems. It's been my experience that some wireless cards, it takes an extra reboot for the OS to properly recognize the wireless card. Wireless support is getting better every day, but I think the best card to buy out is one with an Atheros chipset. Those chips are almost impossible to find in a USB card.
Yep.
So, thank you, Drew. I forget the gentleman who was looking for wireless USB last week, but hopefully you're still listening, and maybe you can try out one of those Belkin cards. Maybe it'll work for you.
Yeah, right. On that note, I got one from a gentleman who talked about the wireless card also. His name is John Schember. And he sent us a note about his USB choice, and he says he has an AirLink 101 AWLL3026 USB wireless adapter, and it works out of the box with Hardy. He says he uses the ZD1211 driver, which is the default component in Ubuntu, and other distros usually have it as a separate package. You can find it on Amazon.com for as little as $12. So that's a pretty cheap alternative there, too.
Okay, let's see. I got another email from a gentleman named Bob, and he says, What did he have to say? Did you get that one too? There we go. Yeah. Great show. I'm a Linux novice. Any Linux users who play Bridge might want to know that Bridgebase, a very large online community, now has a web-based front end that will work with Linux and OS X, formerly Windows only. It is at online.bridgebase.com. When I installed it under Hardy, it asked me to download and install Flash. I eventually did this. Not sure how. It involved downloading a tarball and eventually running something in a terminal, but once installed, it works very well. For me, the importance of this makes small Linux sub notebooks an option for me as well as a travel machine. There we go. So, any idea what Bridgebase is? I've never really used that.
I don't know.
It's online community. Is that like a Facebook thing or?
Not sure. Let me go check out the link. It's called, what is it? Online.
Online.bridgebase.com.
Base.com. And I'm looking. Oops, I misspelled it. I'm on the spot now. Okay, Bridgebase. Oh,
yes, as always, we're totally off the cuff here at Fresh Boots.
Very professional program, by the way.
Darn Skippy.
That's right. Anyway, online Bridgebase is a community where bridge players play bridge.
Ah, okay. I should have known it had something to do with bridge.
Yeah.
I wonder if Bill Gates is a member of that community.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Me and Warren Buffett are regular bridge players.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, that's one of the things they do when they get together. I don't know if they still do, but I think they used to get together like weekly for a game of bridge.
Oh, they don't play poker?
No, as I understand, it's bridge.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Okay.
So yeah, well maybe Bob knows. Maybe he's a friend of Bill Gates online. Yeah,
Bob. We'd like to interview Bill Gates.
That's right. On that note, we got feedback from a listener, Jason. And let's see, it's kind of long, so I'll breeze through it really quickly here. Great show again. Congrats. I'm going to have to take a note of reaction to Mr. Gates leaving Microsoft by Peter. Like him or hate him, Bill Gates is responsible for many of the IT technology we use every day. A big advance Windows provided was a common platform to allow everyone to have a computer in their house. Apple's Macintosh was way too expensive for most budgets initially. Despite the egregious license practices, the whole idea of software as a business model was pioneered by the Gatester. The closed-source Unix and Windows platforms gave rise to the open-source community, which sprouted GNU Linux and all of the software we love and use today. In that respect, thanks Bill, Jeff, and Steve Areno. Microsoft has given us some great applications, despite how they are to be acquired and used. Microsoft Excel is the flagship spreadsheet application for all platforms. Hang on a second. Microsoft Access / SQL Server are rock-solid, stable programs and seldom see any ink or type. Microsoft Exchange Server has now become the number one messaging platform for business. Like I tell my students, if you want work, learn Exchange. Like it or hate it, that is the way things are right now, and I have played both sides of the coin in the messaging wars. IE's incredibly high suck factor made a place for Firefox and Opera out there on the interwebs. Although IE7 has made great strides forward toward a better browser, my favorite game of all time is Microsoft Flight Simulator. Cannot deny them that. Don't get me wrong, I'd rather lick a meat grinder than use Windows for my day-to-day computing, but I have to give credit where credit is due. Keep up the great work, guys. Thanks, Jason. And that was actually none other than Jason Watkins. Our very own Jason Watkins, right. the once and future Jason Watkins of the Fresh Ubuntu podcast.
Right.
Yeah, you know what? I got to disagree. First off, I never said that Bill Gates was not an important factor, okay? That I did not deny. And furthermore, I have said for years that I think that Bill Gates was a very, 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 very smart businessman. However, if you go back and listen to last week's show, I took a moment of silence and basically to thank him for all of the innovations that he and Microsoft have brought to technology. Okay? And I stand by that silence, basically implying that Microsoft has never really innovated anything. They want you to think that they do, and they want everybody to, you know, think that they're this great innovative company that comes up with all kinds of new ideas. But the fact is that they are good at taking existing things and adapting them, whether they, you know, acquire them, or, you know, just rip them off or whatnot. What Microsoft does is they find a program that's, you know, got some potential. They take it, they make it better, and then they make it their own. I mean, that is their business model. For some reason, they want you to think, though, that they are this great innovative company that makes all sorts of new things, and they simply are not. Microsoft Excel was not the first spreadsheet. Okay, they did not create spreadsheets. They did not create email, and they did not create the internet or the internet web browser. You know, so I'm not saying, you know, anything about Exchange or Excel, and, you know, love them or hate them. I'm not denying their market dominance, but I am contending that they're not innovative. All right, you know, Exchange is, you know, they didn't make the concept of email or anything like that. So I think it was kind of interesting, too. We've got some links in the show notes, but if you go back and listen to the Windows Weekly podcast from, I believe it was May 2nd, first week in May, anyway, and then this past week's Twit and Security Now, they both spent a lot of time talking about, or all three podcasts spent a significant amount of time talking about Bill Gates and Microsoft and the contributions that they have made. Yes, I was being a little bit sarcastic, and, you know, but I maintain that they are not an innovation, and that in many cases they have done more harm than good. So, and I stand by those. So I'm not denying that Microsoft and Bill Gates have been a colossal influence in technology, but I don't think that it's always been a good influence. End of rant.
Those are not necessarily the views of Fresh Ubuntu Podcast. Those
oh,
are merely
no,
opinion
actually,
only.
Because I'm hosting this week, they are.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Thanks for that, Peter. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know what side of the fence I fall on that, you know, because there have been lots of Microsoft products that I do like. Although, mm-hmm. you're right, they are not innovative. Because I remember using, I think it was Lotus 1-2-3.
VisiCalc, Lotus 1-2-3, those came before Excel.
That's right. VisiCalc, right? Lotus 1-2-3, yep. before Excel.
And that's another thing, too. Saying that Access/SQL Server are rock solid. Okay, I've had good luck with SQL Server. I totally disagree that Access is a rock solid platform. No. No.
I'm not buying that one.
No.
So I don't know where I fall on this. You know, I admire Bill Gates for having done what he has done, and you know, I think it kind of led the way to his thing was getting a PC in every home.
Yes.
You know, and that, I think, was primarily his first vision, getting a PC in every home. And
although, sorry to interrupt for a second, but if you listen to this week's Twit, I forget, it's either Macron or Jerry Pournelle, or maybe it was Dvorak, points out that that wasn't even really his vision. That was also something that he co-opted from someone else.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, and you know, well, yes, he was, you know, the idea of, you know, of mass marketing, you know, selling software, you know, IBM was selling software too, but they wanted you to, you know, buy their systems. Yeah. But what was it that he was selling? BASIC.
Right.
Did he invent BASIC? No. Kemeny and Kurtz created BASIC at Dartmouth College, you know? And then they made a bunch of money on their operating systems, right? Well, what was the first operating they saw sold? DOS. Mm-hmm. Where did they get that? They basically stole it from Digital Research. I mean, so, you know, CPM and stuff. Right. So, you know, it's just, I maintain that Microsoft is not innovative. They're good at adapting and acquiring things. We'll use that
and marketing, word. You know.
And very, very, very good at marketing. Right. Yes. Oh. Absolutely. Right.
Okay.
I think we got a lot of violence out of that email.
Yeah. That's a show in and of itself, I think.
That's right. Thank you, Jason. That was a lot of great material, though. Seriously.
How about comment from Jose Torres? Jose? He says, we mentioned TrueCrypt in one of the shows. It would be really nice if you talked a little more about TrueCrypt. Get a little deeper into things like what GUIs are out there or how to get your whole Linux partition encrypted. I really love the show. I live in Colombia, South America. Just to let you know, we hear the show over here. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, that's pretty cool. I didn't talk too much about TrueCrypt because when I was doing that a couple weeks ago, I was basically using it to do the whole disk encryption on my Windows partition. And so that's not something I did from within Linux. So I didn't think it would be appropriate to go, you know, into too much detail for how I did that on Windows on a Linux podcast. Mm-hmm. And so far, I have not looked into it since I mentioned it last week. I just, you know, a recurring theme, just too little time. But once I did that whole disk encryption, I have not yet been able to access my Windows partition from within Linux just yet. So I haven't even sat down to, you know, just read through the docs to see if that is even possible at this point, or if I need to make another shared partition to do, you know, data sharing between the two. I basically just followed the, you know, very basic steps. I started up the, the TrueCrypt installer and said, you know, I want to encrypt my entire disk, followed the bouncing ball, and, about, I don't know, an hour or so later, my entire hard drive was encrypted. You can do that very same thing with just plain old stock Ubuntu, though. If you go with the alternate installer, I've never done it myself, but apparently it's pretty easy to go in and do your own encryption on your, on the whole partition, just like you would on Windows with a third-party application such as TrueCrypt. So if you're interested in that, I'm sure a quick little Googling search with, on how to use the Ubuntu alternate installer to do a whole disk encryption, I'm sure you can find a way to do that. And that, loads right up. I believe it boots right through Grub. You just choose it, enter your boot password, and then, you know, you're all set from there.
Yeah. Good. So, I think maybe in a future podcast, we ought to, instead of doing news and user feedback, I think we should do a whole show on tech segments, you know,
mm-hmm.
on the things that we were going to do.
yes.
that are on our list.
We've got plenty of material for tech segments. It's just, you know, time has been, you right. know, time and motivations. Like you've been saying, summertime's just, you know, that's not the time for this.
Exactly.
Maybe this fall we'll start doing more techie segments and, how-tos and pick our favorite articles and stuff like that. I think that sounds like a good idea.
And speaking of alternate installs, are you doing a fresh Ubuntu install this week or not this week?
No, I didn't actually. I had one kicking around. I've got Ubuntu installed in an actual machine, and I haven't really played with it. I'm still trying. I don't know. Every successive install of Zubuntu that I do, it seems more and more like GNOME.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So I don't know. I'm not really seeing what the big difference is these days. But I'm sure that we have some listeners out there who are gonna, would love to point out all of the virtues and benefits and differences of Zubuntu to me. So if you're one of those folks, drop us a line.
I may even do that myself because I downloaded Zubuntu Hardy Heron just a few days ago. So I might put that on a virtual machine too. So
yeah, all right.
Next up.
Next up, we got an email from Eric. And he said, hey, guys, I got a quick question. When I try to add a new VPN connection to Network Manager,
mm-hmm.
must be Network Manager, I get a little window that pops up and says, message, a gnome druid, and that's it. I can't create a new connection at all. I can't see to Google this problem on the cloud, so I was hoping you may have an answer. Well, I do not have an answer right off the bat. My secure access with Linux has pretty much been limited to a few years ago doing a PPTP tunnels and also SSH access. I don't have an answer for you there, Eric, but perhaps one of our listeners does. And that may also be something to check out on Launchpad and see if that is a known bug, because that definitely sounds like something's missing there. I don't know if maybe you're just missing some sort of package or module, or if that's just a bug that should be reported. But I would if Google doesn't do it, I would check Launchpad and see if there's anything helpful there and possibly file a bug report.
Yeah, I just tried to look it up on Google, and it's not giving me any pages at all. The term a gnome druid. So I don't know if he's going to be able to find it.
What if you leave out the A? Maybe that was a typo?
Let me see. Gnome druid. Let's see what the first one says. From library.gnome.org. A gnome druid is a widget gnome druid is a widget for sequentially stepping through some pages. So, maybe he's missing that particular widget.
That's weird, though. Stepping through pages, I don't know what that has to do, really, with VPN connection.
Right.
That sounds kind of odd.
Right.
No clue. Anybody else out there knows, please drop us a note, and maybe we can help Eric out.
Absolutely. This is...
All right.
This is good. So...
Yeah. What else you got?
Let me see. Comment from last comment I have is from Anthony. He says, hi guys, I just recently found your podcast, and the first episode I listened to was about the Loco, and I've been part of the Ohio Loco, and it has been absolutely wonderful. I would heartily recommend anyone who may be hesitant or anyone who doesn't know where to start interacting, or anyone who doesn't know where to start, they should start interacting with and contributing to the Ubuntu community. So we're here to say that, yeah, that's a great idea. And like we said earlier, not necessarily a programming or anything technical like that. It could be as simple as artwork or triaging bugs or something like that. Or even just joining your local loco. So they may have
local
something,
loco.
A local loco, yeah. They may have some things that you could do that requires even less technical knowledge. So anyway, we concur.
And I think, all right. I had only one last Twitter direct message. I had Twittered about a week or so ago that the kid wanted to get a puppy, and his home computer was dying, and I suggested that he get a computer instead. My wife agreed. Had a bunch of different tweets back and forth on that. I said, well, you know what? I'll just get him a computer running Windows, and we'll put Microsoft Bob on there. That was a joke. But Daniel sent me a tweet and said, on your July 1st post, kid wants a dog, wife suggests a new computer. He says, solution? Computer running puppy Linux.
So, there you go.
Perfect. Perfect. I love it. So there you go. That's it. And once again, the Fresh Ubuntu community rises to the occasion to help me, in this case, with a problem. So. Thank you very much.
So what is it? What are you gonna? You're getting a computer or?
I just took one of the ones from the office here and grabbed it, and just bringing it home. So I did not put Puppy Linux on there, though. Oh. I don't know if I'm gonna put a Linux on it. It's most likely just gonna be Ubuntu, maybe Edge Ubuntu.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's getting a recycled machine, which is still light years ahead of, you know, where his old one was. And it'll play Lego Star Wars and Lego Indiana Jones just fine, I'm sure. So he'll be happy.
Perfect.
All right. I think that's about all I have. You got anything else?
I think that's going to cut it for this week.
All right. Well, our goal was to keep it short this week. I don't know how good we did at that, but
45 minutes of talk time.
All right. Well, if you cut some of that out, maybe you can get it down to less.
Maybe. I don't know. We talk too much sometimes. Whenever
we do. We banter, but we're coming up, you know, after the hiatus, I'm sure, you know, after the break, we'll be more focused. And, you know, we'll call that the next season of Fresh Ubuntu if you want, because everybody else is calling their podcast by seasons now. And the next season is just going to be so much better than this season. Just you wait.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait till the cliffhanger next week, and then we'll.
Oh, yeah. Cliffhanger that's got to be. Oh, I know what it'll be, too. It'll be me installing World of Warcraft.
Right.
Right? You'll see. Click on the icon.
You'll have to listen to next week's podcast.
See what happens. Will Peter get it installed? Will his paladin, you know, be able to log in? Find out next week on another thrilling episode of Fresh Ubuntu.
Yes.
All right. On that note, I think we should wrap it up.
I agree.
That's it. All right, so we'll be back again next week. If you have any feedback, send it to us at you can leave us messages, either voicemail or feedback on the website freshubuntu.org. You can email us at harlem@freshubuntu.org or peter@freshubuntu.org, and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/harlem, twitter.com/nicolaitis. And I think that's about it, right?
Yep, that's everything.
Cool. Until next week, then, everybody have a great week.
Bye-bye.